is part of the sequence in which the board meets with each of the constituencies and stakeholders through the day. We've had such an easy morning that I'm hoping that you guys will provide some excitement and keep us awake. We haven't been able to engage in any of the interesting issues yet with ALAC, CCNSO, you know, all those guys are easy. So, we have, our standard form here is to dive directly into some contentful issues. There's a handful of issues on each side that have been prepared in advance. Probably helpful to put up the first slide. Good. So these are questions from you. Impact of new GTLDs on the ICANN staff, timeliness, predictability, and more decentralized decision-making, and the impact of new GTLDs on the registry stakeholders group. And what is that? Refunds? I don't want to talk about that. Next.
But we do.
Yeah. We'll come back to that. I'm being facetious. Questions from us. RIA negotiations, we want to know what you think, what your positions are. The Who Is report, what aspects do you think should be subject to policy work within the GNSO versus left to the staff to implement? What is your thinking about the time frames that are associated with the current budget and operation cycle? And I think there's another slide after that. Yes, indeed. And then some very quick questions on your views about batching. What is your view on a single batch? Is there anything approaching a consensus? If there is, then what kind of time frame do you have in mind? And if there is to be batching, on the other hand, do you believe there's a consensus that a method other than digital archery should be used? So there's the agenda for the day. Let's roll back to the beginning, and I'll turn things over to David.
Thanks, Steve. I'm David Maher, chair of the Registry Stakeholder Group. And thank you for letting us take our agenda first. We appreciate that. We'll start with the impact of new GTLDs on ICANN staff. And I'd like to ask Jonathan Robinson, who is one of our counselors, to address that.
Thanks, David. And hi to Steve and Rod and the rest of the ICANN board. I think really we the board actually from at the last meeting has spoken to us as a stakeholder group and to be thinking about the impact of new GTLDs on our stakeholder group, and we are also mindful of the impact on the ICANN organization and all that entails. And clearly there's a much broader context to all of this where we've seen some of the impacts as the organization moves from predominantly policy management into managing a significant operational program and some of the challenges that has thrown up. I suppose what we're at is that there are many different forums and ways in which these are being discussed, and some of these the issues that have come up are being dealt with, including the dominant discussion on batching and so on. But when you really boil it down to the issues for us as a stakeholder group and as registries, I think we have liaison personnel that we work with and we get on well with and appreciate their efforts in how they work with us. But it seems to us that at times that we need to work with them in a way that they can produce timely and empowered responses to some of our questions. Sometimes it seems that things get delayed in the organization and staff are not able to give us the answers we need fully or accurately as speedily as we might like. And so really for us the challenge is both at the liaison level but also as the stakeholder group grows and expands and we've told you and we'll remind you I think of some of the changes we've made within our stakeholder group, we're going to need that account management function, if you like, to be as effective and well managed as possible, but in particular to be empowered and able to deal with our queries and not to feel that those get held up within the organization through various things. So that's really the key. I don't know, Jeff, if you'd like to add or make any other comments, because we've talked about this as well.
Thanks, Jonathan. Just to add to what Jonathan was saying, I think we're talking at two different levels here as well. We're talking about, one, a liaison to deal with the stakeholder group as a stakeholder group, but that's separate from dealing with staff that we need to deal with each of the registries as registries. I think when you're dealing with individual registries on operational issues, the term liaison has its own problems. We actually don't need a liaison. We actually need an account manager. We need someone that's empowered to make decisions, and that's one of the things that we've seen. Again, this is not a comment towards the current liaisons we have, who are great people, very knowledgeable, but it's our feeling as a group, they are not empowered to make decisions. They always have to go back to whomever and get authority and get some kind of advice or instructions, and that is not scalable at all. When a registry calls and needs an answer, it's not acceptable to say, I need to check with my legal department on everything, or I need to check with so-and-so. Of course, there'll be issues that they have to go back on. I mean, obviously, we don't expect them to know everything. But there's a certain level of, let's call it tier one support, that we believe that the what are currently called liaisons, which I truly believe we need to change the title to account managers or something like that. We've had this discussion with ICANN staff with Kurt Pritz, and I see him in the audience, and he understands the issue, and we just hope that you all help them follow through to make sure that the qualifications we need in an account manager is one that's got some business experience, and I don't mean business from a commercial standpoint or from a for-profit standpoint. I mean someone who understands how organizations operate and work as opposed to, you know, the policy. And so I think, that's what we spent a lot of time talking about, and we're really looking forward to it because it's an exciting time. And, you all have a lot of work to do as well.
Thanks, Jeff. Question?
This is Judith Vasquez. I sit on the board. My question is, and this is to Jeff, who is the registry? Is it the technical platform provider who will do the calling, or will it be the registry on contract?
In this capacity, it has to be the registry that's under contract. It's not meant to foreclose any discussions with back-end providers, but in essence, it's the registry under contract that has the primary responsibility of interfacing with ICANN staff, unless there's some other arrangement privately worked out between those parties.
This is Bertrand Lachapelle. Just a quick point to say that we don't need to belabor this discussion right now because there are other topics. It is a great illustration of the benefits of launching the issue relatively early, because at each meeting, some list of questions, and for instance, the impact on staff, the structure of staff, is something that had not really been mentioned in the previous discussions, and I'm very happy that this is added to the list of topics. I just wanted to say that the goal is to make sure that in Toronto, we shape in an appropriate manner a space during the meeting to talk about this with the different groups in the community, and I would be very happy, and Ray, as chair of the Structural Improvement Committee, is following that very closely as well. Happy to have your feedback and your comments on the topics. We're at a stage where we want to identify as closely as possible the list of issues, not jump into the solutions immediately, but identify correctly all the different issues so that we can prioritize them and see what are the short-term, mid-term, and long-term impacts that have to be addressed. But thank you very much for the input.
Okay, moving along then.
Yes.
The next topic, the impact of new GTLDs on the registry stakeholder group. I think you're already quite familiar with what we've done to anticipate the considerable enlargement of the stakeholder group. We've now for some time enabled observers to participate in our meetings And we've added to observer status recently by amending our charter. And just this morning, the group of those who have observer status in our group met at 7:30 and have created an interest group within the registry stakeholder group. John Nevitt, I believe, is the interim chair of that group. John, if you'd care to say a few words about what your group has done already.
Sure. Thank you, David. So, as David mentioned, we formed the new TLD applicant group this morning, or NTAG, because we need an acronym. And this group will be a group of applicants for this new round of GTLDs under the auspices of the registry stakeholder group. And once we get our contracts to become registries, we will leave the interest group and become full members of the stakeholder group. But with David's blessing and the stakeholder group has been very welcoming to what we're called ourselves observers to the stakeholder group. And we are, while we're called observers, we're full participants except for voting. And the group has been very warm and welcoming to us and our input. And then you will see in the future policy statements from the new TLD applicant group, which may be apart from the actual statements from the stakeholder group. We might support a statement of the stakeholder group, or we may have our own statement. But at least we're organized now and have the ability to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Paul and Ray.
Yeah.
Just a question in this area, and I don't want to start a discussion on that, but I'm throwing it out as food for thought. Is what do you think is going to be the synergy between the registry stakeholder group, the registrar stakeholder group, with the advent of all these new GTLDs and the policy regarding vertical integration? It's certainly going to be something different than you have now. So I wonder if you've explored that or are going to think about that, and what you could forecast is what the world would look like in maybe 3 to 5 years in that regard.
We've given that a good deal of thought going back for some time. And in principle, I think almost everyone that I've talked to, not only in our group but in others, we agree that even given vertical integration, a particular entity should only be able to vote in one stakeholder group or constituency, as the case may be. And we've had talks, for example, with the registrars. The executive committees of both groups have met. And in principle, that's agreed to, that if registrars become involved as registries, they'll have to make a choice as to where they vote. And I think that's a workable solution.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, David. And Ray, thank you for that question. It's a really important one, and I'd like to just expand on that briefly. Obviously, when the introduction of vertical integration was identified and permitted in the new round of TLDs, it did raise the question about voting and representation in various stakeholder groups, specifically the registries and the registrars. But as we now know, following reveal day for new top-level domains, it's actually a bigger issue than that. It's not just registries and registrars. With the advent of dot brands, for example, and companies that may be a single registrant, protecting their own mark, they may have interests in the intellectual property constituency. They may actually have interest in the business constituency. So it's theoretically possible. I mean, you could have one entity that has interests in four different stakeholder groups or constituencies. So while we're currently focused on a lot of tactical things related to the new GTLD process, there's actually some more structural and strategic things that we need to be thinking about as a community. There is a GNSO review scheduled to begin next year, and it's unclear at this point whether that review is actually going to be worthwhile to be done on schedule, because we're still going to be in the process of the introduction of all of these new top-level domains, new players, new participants. So, I mean, this is something that is more than just the registries and the registrars.
Can I speak to that last point? You know, I'm the chair of the SIC, and the scope, if you will, of the review is moving more from one of what you do per se is more as to as how you do it. So it's more of one of measure of organizational effectiveness. And so we will be looking, the independent reviewer will be looking at, because and actually you'll get a chance to participate in the formulation of the criteria, which staff is busily working on now, because the intent is to not let the contractor invent the criteria, but give him the criteria to use, which reflects the thinking of the community and the board as well. But the thing is, it's going to focus more towards organizational effectiveness. So it's going to be how are you coping with this? You know, what kind of operational plans you have? What are you looking at in terms of resources? What are you looking at in terms of governance? It's not going to be a judgment, if you will, on the content of that. More as a way of how are you going to deal with it. And certainly during this time frame, if there are things that are going to cause changes to the structure of, for example, this stakeholder group, those would be made independent of the review, because you can't wait for a review to say, okay, now we can do this, because the dynamics of the situation just won't allow that. And so that's why we're trying to focus this more on organizational effectiveness, like what are your election procedures, you know, all those other kinds of measurements of how you do business and as opposed to the actual content of it.
We have given thought to election procedures. The size of the registry stakeholder group in the past is made it possible to operate by consensus. Clearly, when we have, say, 500 or 1,000 members, consensus is probably not achievable, at least in a practical way. So we have thought of voting procedures. The current charter, which is publicly available, provides that in any given case, a member can invoke a voting that is based on the number of domains under management. And at least going forward, we assume that that will be the best way to proceed for a fair voting system. I think Bertrand had a comment.
Thank you, David. A question as a follow-up, and not to belabor, but to put on the thinking list. The distinction, how do you integrate and how will you integrate the evolution in the structuring of the market or the industry with the emergence of back-end registry service providers that will be basically doing the churning of the hard work operationally, separating the policy function where there will be a registry nominal owner that will be doing the policy function and just outsourcing the back-end registry. How will you integrate this new type of operator, knowing that some of them will have actually a lot of contracts with registries? And if they are part of the decision-making process, they can even be requested by their operator to be the representative in the environment. How will you be handling the weighted voting or the number of proxy, it's not proxy, it's the delegation of voting that those actors may be? Is it likely to bring an imbalance? How do you consider the structuring of this group in the future? It's not for an answer right now, but to make sure that this topic is on the agenda.
Thank you. Ken, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to elaborate a little bit on what Keith said, and that is that already we have reached out to other constituencies, including the BC, and discussions, informal discussions with members of the IPC, recognizing the role that they have and how they relate, because many of the brands that are applying as applicants are members of these constituencies, creating an awareness to avoid situations where there could be conflicts in the voting procedures. And we're trying to work in a very smooth, transparent way. And we've gotten a very positive response, especially from the BC that has many of these applicants in there. And it's important to know that it's not just a contracted party thing, but rather working with that entire community.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, David. Just two very brief, I think they're informational points. I mean, one is a supplement, and that's, of course, the advent of the CC operators moving into the GTLD space, which is another key crossover point as they have applied for the operation of GTLDs. In fact, there's one even more sort of extreme example, though in and of itself it doesn't appear to cause particular concern, but that's a CC operator applying to ICANN to be not only a GTLD operator, but as well a registrar at ICANN. So, I mean, that's pretty substantial conceptual change, even if in practice it doesn't make a whole lot of difference right now. And there's some specifics about that example. And then to Bertrand's point, I'm not sure if I understood you correctly, Bertrand. It in no way undermines the value of the point you made, but there are, of course, existing back-end operators running TLDs right now and have been doing so within our stakeholder group for some time. But the scale of the problem is what changes substantially. And so, yeah, I take that point.
Let me ask, make a suggestion here. This question of scaling and the impact on organization is one that is quite obvious to discuss, but less obvious as to what the precise details are. We met with non-contracted parties, commercial stakeholder group earlier, had some related discussion. And I would like to ask all of you to jot down briefly, let's say one page max, what you think the impact is going to be, and then any suggestions you might have or things to consider. Not necessarily, it doesn't have to be an official position. It doesn't have to be, a specific demand, but a thought piece that would go into a meaningful discussion of these things, and to get that started in. And so, no process, just sort of get to the bullet points and do that, and then I think we can have a kind of interesting discussion. And the other is that I have a favorite little essay that relates scaling and structure. And if you send me names, I'll send this out. It's only about 3 pages. It's a classic by J.B.S. Haldane, an early 1900s naturalist, titled On Being the Right Size, and a little exercise in mathematics. Yep.
Regarding that paper that you were asking about, actually, the plan is that what we're planning now from the standpoint of the Structural Improvements Committee is for Bertrand to conduct a session in Toronto to discuss this whole issue. So that would probably be your homework for that session.
Yeah, preparation. Yep.
Just a suggestion. You might want to talk to the CCNSO, and Keith, I mean, you know how to do that, because, A, we're used to having GTLD operators running CCTLD registries, so that's worth remembering, and secondly, we've also gone through some structural changes because of the fact that we have to deal with the possibility that an IDN CCTLD manager in a country may be a different manager or a different registry from the current manager of the ASCII CCTLD. So we've done some work on how you manage that sort of thing. So if you want to reach out and ask, we may be able to give you some help.
Thank you. I think we can now move on to the third topic on the agenda we proposed, which is the question of refunds to applicants of surplus from new application fees. Ken?
Yeah, thank you very much. This won't take a long period of time, but I would like to, at this point in time, put down a placeholder for future discussions about a process for this and dig into this much more deeply. There are expectations that exist with respect to what the funds were to be used for that were given to ICANN to process the applications as opposed to, let's say, the auction funds. We have a lot more important issues than to worry about what to do if there's something left a year or whatever it may be down the road. The other point that goes with this, and I think is a reasonable one, is you are dealing with a significantly material amount of money. And the community in general, I believe, it will have a significant amount of concern that the that this process was managed properly from a financial standpoint. So my suggestion to the board is that you consider the possibility of putting an addendum into next year's annual report and doing a source and application and use of funds as to how, you know, you're talking over $250 million here, as to how these funds were used with some sort. And if you incorporate it in the report, naturally there would be an oversight function on the part of your accountants and auditors. I think this would give the community a certain amount of comfort, and I believe this would significantly assist in any credibility in dealing with concerns that people might have. So it's just food for thought there, Steve.
So thank you very much, Ken. It's actually more than food for thought. It's stuff that we have thought about. And I've actually spoken on this multiple times, including making a point of it in my opening talk yesterday morning. We are committed to making sure that the funds that have come in for the GTLD program are accounted for separately. So your idea of an addendum is in line. I don't know the precise format of the, but yes, indeed, fencing off those costs, accounting for those costs, and understanding it. So that's one element. Those funds are paying for, you characterize them as just paying for application processing. The application processing can have a narrow or broad interpretation. Portion of the funds, as everybody is aware, are set aside for risks, for litigation costs and so forth. So that's all part of that umbrella.
Yeah, and I think the community and the people I've talked to fully acknowledges. I think there are methodologies for dealing with that, and I'd like to further explore dealing with that potential risk, because most lawyers would tell you that as you move further away from the right. initial delegations, the risk becomes less and less. So what I would say is I honestly feel that you need to have an independent review of exactly what the exposure would be, and maybe you could develop a methodology for dealing with that.
Right.
You know, and that makes sense to the people, but we really did not, as applicants, intend on funding further operations beyond this was supposed to be a cost recovery and exposure situation.
Sure. But that period of time is not just, you know, a short period of time, it's a long period of time. But right. So we're moving into a gray area of the following type. It is very, very reasonable to make the suggestions. The execution, I'll get there in just a second. The execution is not so easy to outsource to the community to say, here's what risks you ought to take or here's how you evaluate them, except as a suggestion. But when it comes down to the risk to the corporation, it becomes a corporate risk that has to be managed as a business but done well and with competence and expertise in that area. So that then moves into staff area, but with heavy oversight and clarity about what values are being put in that, and adjusting that model over time with experience and with the knowledge about where we are in the process, definitely ought to be all part of that, in my view.
Well, that was my implication. If I was in the position as a director, I would want to have that exposure analyzed
right.
by people who have an obligation and responsibility to ICANN
yep.
and not the community.
Now,
so.
now let me deal rather explicitly with the question about refunds. It is not my understanding that there was any commitment to refund excess monies coming out of the processing and that the only form of surplus would come out of auctions. That's what I believe I heard in the way that you talked about.
No, that isn't what I meant. What I meant very simply was, Steve, over the last 5 years, the board has discussed what to do with auction proceeds. There was an intention that at some point in time the board would develop a methodology for dealing with that. That's pot A. Pot B is the money that was given to ICANN as part of the application process.
Yep.
And I'm not proposing in any way whatsoever that the auction proceeds would be any sort of an issue to deal with.
So here's my view, and if it turns out that this is not, you know, is sort of in the center of everyone's thinking, the boards and everybody else's, I'll take the hit on it. But my understanding, one pot, no distinction between auction proceeds versus surpluses versus funds left over from the risk pot that are not there. I'm about to be corrected, I suspect.
You're about to be assisted, I think, you know, in clarification. Maybe Shireen can...
Sorry, I only got one foot in the hole. Let me put the other one in. And that no decision is being made about what to do with those funds at this time. There will be a full development of inputs and community consensus before we make the decision. So whether it's refunded or whether we have a new foundation or whether we have some other sort of thing is in the future.
Right. And this wasn't meant to be a distraction. I prefaced my comments by saying that this is not the time to get too deep.
Exactly. Okay. So assistance, please.
I'll start, and maybe Shireen can build on that. The first thing is I think it's an interesting idea with respect to a possible addendum or separate financial reports, and I'll let Xavier comment on that in a moment, our chief financial officer who's also in the room. With respect to the program funds versus auction funds, I mean, the clearly the view is those would be managed separately, and as has long been discussed, if after some extended period of time, we learn that there are surplus funds left from the program, or the costs were lower or the risks were lower after a suitable amount of time, then there would be a process to look at what was done with those funds. But I think Shireen had something to say, and then I think Xavier may want to comment on the first point.
I see. Jeff? Were you done? Yeah. So before Shireen, Jeff, please.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty much what I wanted to say, and I disagree with the notion that there should be a process to determine what happens with the funds. I think the registry stakeholder group position is that it's a completely, if there's any leftover, I'm not saying there will be, we don't go down that rat hole because we don't know. If there are any excess funds from the processing, not the auctions, from the processing, that must go back to the applicants. This was a cost recovery process. It, to the extent it's more than cost recovery, it should not go out to the community. It's not for the community to decide. The applicants paid for the processing of the applications. Once the processing and all those costs, however determined, are done, goes back to the applicants. Otherwise, you've changed the entire fundamental nature of the program by not making it cost recovery.
I look forward to having an extended discussion on this. It is not, in my mind, not so simple to reach that conclusion. And just to give you the rest of that, what happens if a number of parties show up and say, oh, had we but known that the ultimate cost was going to be this much less, we would have applied? That puts us in an awkward position. Maybe there's a quick answer to that. But in my view, everybody who applied under a very clean set of rules that said $185,000, this is what it is, except for the Jazz situation. And it's a long time from there until the dust settles and we know what the ultimate costs are. To try to say that everybody who applied has an automatic right to have a pro rata portion returned strikes me as an awfully constrained view of the process. I'll just fess up. That's my personal response, and we'll see where this goes. But I had not understood, and I would challenge that there is a firm commitment of the kind that you're saying.
Some of the applicants agree with your point of view.
Okay. Shireen and Xavier and Jonathan, and did you want to chime in there?
I don't want to talk about public process for disposal of funds, because this has nothing to do with the BFC. That is something has to be imposed on us on what to do. So someone has to agree that. But on behalf of the Board Finance Committee, what do we see our role in with all this money coming in? First of all, this is not our money. We are the guardian of this money. So this is number one. Our responsibility, and this is what we will do first, is segregate the money into separate buckets, each ring fence very carefully, whether it is the risk reserve or if it's an auction money that come in. Everything will be separated and segregated. Second is the preservation of the capital. This is very important. We are not there to take risk with this money. We are there to preserve it and to make sure it is there. The third is what was mentioned earlier about sources application of fund, is there has to be an accountability and transparency on the use of this money, audited and reported constantly and permanently, right? So if at the end there is surplus, well, good luck to everybody, but this is not the BFC job to decide what to do with it. Some higher authority will have to decide on that.
Xavier?
Thank you, Steve. Just quick facts on the in the information that we've provided in the budget presentation. There is a certain amount of discussions relative to the existing actions that have been taken and the plans on how to handle the cash management, the communication about the cash management in the sense of reporting. Just to provide a high-level views, the funds have been and will continuously be segregated. They are in specific bank accounts that are totally different than the bank accounts that the ICANN operations use. There is also a whole infrastructure of accounting and process that is separate for the new GTLD from the ICANN operations. For those of you who are interested in the technicalities, we have a separate general ledger, entire general ledger, which is a different, basically a separate instance of the accounting system for the new GTLD, which will let us account for, produce financial statements that are specific to the new GTLD program, statement of operation and balance sheet, and so on. I won't go in further into detail, but there's a lot of infrastructure created to ensure the very clear separation between the new GTLD program and the rest of the ICANN operations, and also enable to provide analysis and reporting on the subject.
Thank you. We got several people queued up here. Judith and Mike. And, okay, Judith.
I am the only board member who did not vote on the new GTLD program. And coming in to something so important to the organization, I took a great risk by putting myself as an applicant, and I paid the $185,000 to do the test, to answer the questions myself, to understand what it's like to be an applicant. There is nothing, nothing that guarantees a return of the excess funds. So, Jeff, this is grossly unfair. We are colleagues. There is nothing that guarantees that. I withdrew my application, not knowing if I would get a refund. Can you imagine that? But I went through it myself to understand what we are getting ourselves into. Please, please. So let us be sane about this. You talk about scaling the organization. It takes capital, front-end capital, to scale. As an applicant, I have only one expectation, and that if there is any excess, please put it in good decisions around our capability to build a truly capable organization. Thank you.
Thank you. Michael.
I guess this is a follow-up to the details about the separate accounting functions. Since ICANN staff currently doesn't use timesheets, how are you going to be accounting for staff resources?
Sorry, I appreciate your excellent training as an attorney and putting the answer to the question in your hypothesis there. With the presumption that the only way to account for things carefully is to use timesheets, not so.
Yep.
So I heard Kurt, I think, earlier today suggest that the original intent of excess funds was to be used to reduce future rounds, the cost of future rounds, which seems to me to make a lot of sense. That way, you know, we don't have to figure out timelines when it's safe to give the money back. At the point you have future rounds, you know, you include whatever's left over at that point in the planning. To the extent that was indicated as a plan for future funds in the past, it seems like a perfectly reasonable path to pursue, you know, going forward. Just keep going with what the original plan was. And I think that's still consistent with the notion as cost recovery. It's just cost recovery over a longer period of time.
I'm trying to understand if there's a statement or a question there.
So I'll ask a question. Is it in fact the case that there was a planned intent in the past to use funds, excess funds, for the reducing the cost of future rounds?
I'm probably not the best person to answer that because I haven't been tracking everything that's been said by everybody along the way. My instinct is that precise answers to questions like that are in the future rather than based upon whatever might have been speculated in the past. But I appreciate the help, assistance from the people who have actually been running the program. Is there a crisp statement on this in the past, Chuck?
Thanks, Steve. Chuck Gomes. And Kurt can correct me if I'm wrong, or Bruce can as well. But there was discussion of that idea during the new GTLD PDP. I don't recall that any specific decision was ever made on that.
Thank you.
Steve?
Yeah.
We're getting short on time, and you have your list of questions.
Right.
Do you think we may have exhausted the...
I'm absolutely exhausted. No. Yeah. So I that's probably right. Thank you very much. I'd actually expected a very short, crisp treatment of this, which was no. But this has been informative. I mean, I take the to heart this discussion. Let's move on then.
Okay. Well, your first question had to do with the RAA, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, and I think Jeff Newman would like to address that.
Thanks. I think on this issue, we just wanted to make a couple points that may not have been made in other fora. As entities that all know what it's like to negotiate with ICANN, we certainly feel the registrar's pain. But this is just going to repeat some of the statements I made yesterday during the session, but not everyone could be there. There are a couple of clauses that we found in reading the June 4th agreement that were not requests made by law enforcement, but seemed to be requests that were put in by ICANN staff. And with two of those, we had some difficulty in as registries, and we wanted to just provide these comments. The first one is on the definition of consensus policies. The definition of consensus policy has been a sacred item in the registry agreements and was heavily, heavily negotiated. We believe that it is fundamentally important for the definition to be the exact same in the registry and registrar agreements, especially in this environment, as Ray had pointed out, with vertical integration. It is critical that those definitions are completely aligned. We noticed that in the registrar agreement, ICANN Legal had added a provision stating that everything in the agreement is itself subject to the consensus policy process. I'm paraphrasing. It doesn't exactly say it. It says it much better and more legal. But essentially, that's what it says. The second clause that we have a problem with is a revocation clause that the ICANN staff had put into the agreement. It basically states that if ICANN decides unilaterally that this is not the right business model or they want to change business models, that ICANN on its own can revoke the entire agreements with all of the registrars, come up with new agreements. Of course, registrars will be allowed to enter into those new agreements. This to us is completely unreasonable. It is the same reason we found the agreements a few years ago proposed for the registries unreasonable. There should never be a unilateral right of termination of ICANN for anything other than for cause. It is impossible. You're talking about millions and millions of dollars. In fact, multi-billion dollar industry that you're going to make at ICANN's whim if they want to revoke and change the business model. No one can live by that. It's as absurd as the registrars coming back and asking for a mutual clause that says something to the effect of, in the event the registrars or the community do not believe that ICANN should manage the accreditation of registrars, the registrars may unilaterally revoke the agreement, come up with a new system, and come up with new criteria and agreements. Of course, ICANN would be allowed to reapply. Both of those are completely absurd. We ask that ICANN withdraw that from the agreement. We heard yesterday, those things will fall through. They'll eventually come out of the agreements. I find that just astonishing. They should have never gone into the draft agreements. They were never discussed with the community. They're not needed for the community, and we ask that they please be withdrawn.
Noted.
Thank you, Steve. Shall we move along then to the who is issue, the question of the GNSO Council versus staff treatment of the issues raised in the most recent proceeding. And I think I can address this very briefly. Policy questions are reserved to the GNSO. Did you have something specific in mind and asking about this?
Yes. I think the point of the question is, and this depends upon having read and sort of thought through all the recommendations in the report, which I'll note I have not yet. But the form of this question is, of those recommendations, which ones do you judge are, in fact, ones that should be subjected to the GNSO policy development process versus which ones should be left to the staff? So the generic statement of policy stuff should go through the GNSO, no problem. The question then is which ones are and which ones aren't.
Okay. I suggest then that we address this
good.
In writing following this meeting. We'll do that.
Good.
And that brings us to the last topic, the budget and operations plan. And Chuck, I think you are going to talk about that, the cycle.
I was actually going to do the next one, but I can do this one. First of all, I think that we're relatively comfortable with the cycle, and I'm talking about the cycle starting with strategic plan review and then budget and operations starting from, that process will start here July 1st, I think. I think we're fairly comfortable with that. We also saw that in the strategic planning, there's a new committee added, SOAC committee. One of the things with regard to the budget and operating plan, and we submitted this in our comments, so I won't belabor it on that, but I'm sure Xavier has looked at that, is that there still needs to be more detail, especially with regard to costs. And revenue is pretty clear where it's coming from. Unfortunately, and my guess is that it's because of some systems problems that I've heard indirectly, but in the previous cycle, there was a delineation of what the costs were for CCNSO, for GNSO, et cetera. That same level of detail for costs was not provided this year. And we said this in our comments, that more detail in that regard would help us manage. I think it would help the CCNSO recognize where costs are being expended on them. And like we said in our comments, the registry comments, the CCs then could decide what, except in the cases of security and stability, could decide it for services they don't want, since there's such a huge gap with between what CCs contribute and the services that are provided. But we're really relatively comfortable with the cycle as it is.
One key thing that is of interest to us is we're hearing some pushback in other areas from other groups about the amount of time available to comment and about the speed of it. So a suggestion that is under discussion is to tighten up the time for the strategic plan and thereby create more time in the year for the development of the budget and the operations plan.
Thanks, Steve. And we haven't discussed this as a stakeholder group, so I'll give my personal observation. I think that's a good track for thinking, mainly because there are less comments and going on, because the strategic plan has been developed over several years, and there are modifications, less changes. I think that's a good idea. And also another idea is, and I think others have said this, not in this group, but the idea, the probably a little less time for replies and more time for initial comments might not be bad to consider either, because as you know, some of the people had to be extended into the reply period.
Let me push you a little further. We've got a 6-month cycle for the strategic plan. Would you want to cut that down by 6 days, cut it down by 6 weeks, cut it down to 6 weeks, cut it down to 6 days? I'm being a little facetious, but...
I understand. You can't cut it down too far. I think, and Xavier and his team can talk to this more than I can, but the further you get away from the end of the year, the less history information you have on the future budget. But if I was to just off the top of my head, you know, maybe 4 months and the balance, 4 and 8 would be a guess for me, but that's without a lot of thought.
Thank you. Sebastian?
Yes, I'm sorry, sir, but I don't want that just one idea throw like that will be the end of the stories. And I would like to throw my idea is that to have the 6 months for one and 8 months for the other, and the one overlapping to the other could be a good solution too, because I don't think that shorting the discussion about the strategic planning, it's a good idea. And I will say that this year specifically and especially, I will not go into that direction, but it's once again my personal point of view and suggestion. Thank you very much.
I'm glad I don't feel strongly about what we just discussed. So, I understand what you're saying. So that would, if I take your numbers, that's a 14-month cycle. There'd be a 2-month overlap in the process, and so the tail end of one would be going on while you start up, or to put it the other way, you'd be starting up one while you were still finishing the other. The hand raised. Oh, our CFO. Yes, indeed.
Just to indicate that we have scheduled tomorrow a meeting with a number of leaders of the organizations to review the process, the budget process, and be able to try to identify a number of improvements that are meaningful to everyone in order to improve notably the public comment and the general interaction with the community on the budget process, because I think there's a number of us, including myself, who are not satisfied with the effectiveness of this process today.
Thank you.
We are very close to our time, and you did raise the question of batching.
Oh, yes.
Do you want to delve into that?
Next slide. Thank you. So questions on batching. What are your views on having a single batch? Do you believe there's anything approaching a consensus? And if so, then what would be an acceptable time frame to do a single batch? And on the other hand, if there's to be batching, do you believe there is consensus that a method other than digital archery should be used? The way that's phrased is one-sided. It is... do you believe there's consensus not to use digital archery? It doesn't ask if you have consensus of what to use instead.
First of all, I think we have to remember that this process is divided into three different sections. The first section involves the evaluation of the applications.
Yes.
The second section involves developing some sort of methodology for delegation that is equitable and makes sense.
Yes.
And the third is taking the delegation and moving it forward in a secure, stable way that does not impact in any adverse way the root system. I think what we have a political issue that has been resonant over the last 2 weeks with the GAC. And what it means to me, what I hear, is it doesn't matter if we get all this stuff done tomorrow. We got to wait till next April. My suggestion is you used in vertical integration, an intercession that ICANN had with the GAC in Brussels, if I recall. You might consider the possibility of reducing the timeline for this by offering some sort of an incentive to the GAC to have some sort of an early intercession to deal with that issue. If you offer it early enough on, and frankly, as far as I would be concerned, my guess is nobody would have any concerns if ICANN funded the whole doggone thing, because you're saving 2 or 3 months of time if you can get the GAC to make that intercession in the early part, let's say in January, and not wait until...
It's harder than that. A new element that's crept into this is that the GAC has a role now in the in this process, an objections process, and they are giving us a... I don't know whether it's gotten to the formal point or not, but the direction they're going is that they don't want to give us advice in piecemeal. They want to give advice on everything. And so that in itself kind of creates a single batch phenomena.
Well, if that's the case, then hypothetically, if you can develop efficiencies working with the community, because there's been a lot of good ideas been thrown out, that Cherian's been involved in work groups and stuff like that, the possibility might exist that you could get a single batch followed by the GAC and then move forward. Your big issue is still going to be developing a delegation scheme that you can live with. But
I would have thought so, but Chris and others have suggested that there's some natural trickling that happens even if they all come out of the evaluation process at once. Chuck and somebody keep trying.
Let me go directly to the questions that are up there. Unfortunately, not to give you as specific answers as you would like, because the registry stakeholder group and our observers, we really haven't come to any sort of consensus position on whether there should be a single batch or not. Certainly, there are a lot of members and observers that believe that, nor have we decided what should be used instead of digital archery. But Kurt asked us a question in the session we had with him this morning with regard, okay, how should we proceed on this? Because time is of the essence, and the longer we wait, the more backtracking we may have to do. So I threw this suggestion out this morning. There are certain bits of information that staff could obtain right now without any further discussion, because it's just obtaining information. For example, how many applicants would opt out and are okay with being in the last batch? If we knew that, I don't know how many that would be, but if we knew that, we've probably reduced the size of the problem a little bit. Another bit of information, and this came out of the session that Kurt led at the end of the day yesterday on batching, is you could ask applicants who have multiple TLDs to prioritize their TLDs. That would be information that possibly could be used, wouldn't be guaranteed to be used, but could be used in terms if we did go to a batching solution, and applicants then would be able to have some say in terms of which TLDs are more important to be done earlier for them. There may be other elements of that information. Now, let's go beyond that. We still have the issue of, okay, how does the board come up with make a decision? And I don't envy you in that regard. But a lot of information has been received here, some in writing, probably some more is coming in writing. What my personal suggestion was in the meeting this morning was do a summary, set some sort of near-term deadline in terms of the input, do a summary and analysis just like you do with the public comment periods.
Yep.
A brief comment period. When I say brief, I'm thinking maybe 2 weeks, something like that. And then, you know, of course, it's in your lap again. And I, like I said, I don't envy you in that. But that's just one approach to maybe make it happen quickly.
Just to quickly review the numbers, 1,930 applications, 1,409 unique names, 1,185 distinct applicants. So if they prioritize and you say only one per applicant, you still have 1,185, assuming they're all successful. You would nibble at it, but it wouldn't solve the core problem.
I understand. But you would have information that could be used to do it in a more meaning. We'd have more data to do that than we have right now.
It's always good to have more data. Yes, sir.
Two quick points. First of all, in the interest of time, Kurt's done a very good job of listening to us over the last couple of days. And so if you want to hear the range of views on batching, he'll be able to give it to you. Second, I think some of these questions are hard to answer without some input from ICANN. For example, is a digital archery the right method? Well, it depends, I think, in large part on whether it can be fixed and what time frame. Also, can there be a single batch? Well, I think it depends on how long it would take to do that. So if we had some feedback from ICANN about what the ranges were and the answers to those questions, we'd have, I think, better answers for you.
So we actually were trying to ask the community what the time frame would be that is acceptable, so that rather than us saying, well, would it make a difference if we could do it in 2 months or 6 months or 10 months or something like that? But anyway, that's where we are.
John.
Thank you. John Nevitt, Donuts. So one question you don't have up there, Steve, is if you do a single batch, and let me preface that by saying I'm speaking on behalf of Donuts, not the applicant group that we formed this morning. If you do a single batch, when would you release the names? For example, if it's an eight-month batch, do you do 200 a month? Or 250 a month, or do you do it all at the end? I would strongly urge you not to save them all for the end, because then you could just you're kicking the can down the road, creating roadblocks at the end. So instead of having 200 come out and going through pre-delegation testing and going through contracting and going through delegation, you're having 2,000 come out at once, or 1,400 coming out at once. It was just going to clog the pipe. So we'd And then you're already delayed that time. So people are saying that there's going to be some natural selection. The vast majority will go through one path. So there won't be that much in delayed in contention and whatnot. So we strongly urge you to go through the process where you're having a rolling announcement. And it could be one batch. It's fine as long as it's rolling and not holding them all to the end.
Thank you.
Sorry, Alex Stamos. It seems all this discussion of batching, there hasn't been a lot of discussion about trying to shorten the whole process, even with a longer batch, through moving contention resolution earlier. You talked about 1,900 versus 1,100, and it seems a lot of problems go away if a big chunk of those 800 or 500 companies, however many are going to have to get out, are getting out earlier. And it seems to me there's ways that the board, when you do this, can encourage people to take care of their contention issues earlier, perhaps by economically incenting them to do it earlier, or by building in the batch rules about contention so that people feel like they can get their risk management stuff done now and then hopefully take 400 or 500 people applications out of the process and make the whole thing shorter for everybody else.
I feel like we're discussing how to reduce the employee count by offering them exit packages before we do layoffs. So. Bertrand?
One quick question, taking advantage of your presence here. During the discussions, there has been a possible criteria that has been mentioned in terms of ordering, not batching, but ordering. What is the reaction in your group regarding the suggestion that was made by some people of using a distinction between IDNs and others? Is the notion of IDNs first something that is utterly unacceptable, acceptable, worrisome, great? A quick feedback, knowing that I'm sure you don't have an agreed position collectively. But
thank you, Bertrand. Let me just preface this. Let me just make the statement. We as a stakeholder group have not discussed this in much detail, the specific proposal. So what you may hear from individuals is not the stakeholder group position. All right, Jeff, I may be wrong.
I think we're occupying a room that is about to be used for another meeting. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, all the directors, for attending this meeting. It's always a high point of an ICANN conference for the registry stakeholder group, and we very much appreciate your candor and your assistance.
And thank you. Thank you, David, for the organization, and thank you, everybody, for frank and forthright discussion here.